Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray.
Hi folks, this is Bob Maine, and you're listening to the Handgun World Show, episode number 46 to be exact, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for listening. If you're tuning in for the first time, I want to thank you for listening, or even if you're kind of new, you've probably heard me mention, I open up almost every show this way. I'm just a regular guy. I'm not a gunsmith, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, I'm not some type of a combat technical trainer, or anything like that. What I am is I'm actually a salesperson. I'm a businessman that for about the last almost five and a half years now, I have been carrying a gun for personal protection every day. It's part of my wardrobe, folks. It's a philosophy. It's a mindset. It's something that I do. All right? So now it's actually become part of me, carrying a firearm. I exercise my Second Amendment right under the United States Constitution to protect myself against any violence that might try to come at me. Am I going to be a perfect shot every time? I sure hope so, but I know I have a lot of work to do. But anyway, I'm going to give you practical experience. I'm just going to talk to you about common sense ideas on owning, carrying, and shooting a gun. Today, in this episode, I want to talk about combat shooting and excess sights. You've heard me talk about excess big dot sights. For some of you who are kind of new, that's XS big dot sights, XS sights. And you can look at their website, XSSights.com. I'm going to talk about the advantages of these excellent sights. You know, I've got them on my Glock 26, and I tell you, I'm really, really enjoying them. You know, and actually, I recently shot an IDPA match with it. I'm going to shoot another match coming up real quick with the Glock 26 and the XS sights. And I want to talk about why I think they're an excellent sight for you to have on your handgun, especially a defensive handgun. I'm going to point out the differences between these sights and target sights. They make sights for a lot of different handguns, folks. You know, as you know, I love Glocks. I carry a lot of Glocks. XS makes sights for car pistols, for Smith & Wesson M&Ps, for 1911s, and for Springfield XDs. A lot of the real popular models of guns out there, they make them for those guns now, too. So I think you should consider them. They have extremely fast target acquisition, and that big upfront dot up there in the front on the front of your slide is huge. You're going to hear an audio soundbite, and you're going to also talk to me, or you're going to listen to me talk about how advantageous these sights are for fast acquisition. And yes, you can be accurate with them. And by the way, check out my YouTube channel. I did a review on the Glock 26 with my XS sights a little bit. I'm going to do a little bit more review on XS sights as well. But boy, I got to tell you, folks, the reason I chose to do this podcast right now is the more I shoot these things, the more I'm falling in love with these sights. Okay, so I'm going to get into that in about 10 minutes, but I want to cover something else real quick before I dive into the main topic. Couple of announcements I want to get out of the way. Handgunworld.com is the website. If you are downloading these podcasts from iTunes, if you go to Handgun World Show on iTunes, if you search that, you'll find my show. If you're downloading it from iTunes, I want you to do me a favor today. I want you to go to my main website at handgunworld.com. And I want you to go ahead and take a look at the picture of the XS sights that I'm going to post on the website. I want you to take a look at it. It's excellent. I'm also going to post a link to a video. You're going to hear the audio portion of a video, but it's a really good video that I want you to link to. And I'm also going to link to James Yeager's video. So watch James Yeager's video. He has XS sights on his Glock 19. And I'm not lying, folks. You can watch it on YouTube. He shoots his Glock 19 at 100 yards with XS big dot sights. And he hits a steel pepper popper. He hits a steel target. So if you think these things aren't accurate, all right, just go watch the two videos, the links to the two YouTube videos that I'm going to post on my main website at handgunworld.com. All right, that's it for the announcements. I keep things short and sweet. I don't want to make my show real commercial for me or for other people. A little bit of listener feedback before I get into the XS sites. Got a nice email here from a listener, and he said I could share this with you. So here you go. He says, "Hi, Bob. First of all, I want to say that I enjoy your podcasts and keep up the good work." Well, thank you very much for that compliment, sir. I really appreciate the nice compliments. I don't do this for a living, folks. This is just a hobby of mine, and it's a passion of mine. Maybe you feel my excitement for this shooting sports. Maybe you feel that come through on these podcasts. I don't know, but thanks for the good words there. Okay, he says, "I'm a gun enthusiast, and I'm finally able to buy my first handgun in a few months. I would like to get your input on my first handgun purchase. I've always enjoyed guns and supported the right to carry. And I've wanted to buy one so I can feel protected, because about a year ago, one of my friends was kidnapped, beaten, and held at gunpoint for 8 hours. Something that I believe could have been avoided if he was carrying, and one of the main reasons that I feel the need to carry a firearm. Now, for my first purchase, I have some guidelines to narrow down what exactly I would look for in a firearm. First, I'm preferential to 1911s, just because of the stopping power associated with them and the visual appeal. I was told that a SIG 45 would also be a viable option. I know that I want a semi-auto pistol, not a revolver, something with stopping power, middle-range price, and relatively quiet. I fired a rifle and a shotgun before, many times, and the noise was at times uncomfortable, something that I would like to avoid. I would like to hear your suggestions, if you can. Again, keep up the good work. Thank you." Okay, well, first of all, to the person who sent me that email, you know who you are. Thank you very much for that feedback. This is a tough question to answer. When somebody asks me, what should I purchase for my first gun? I actually did a podcast a couple of months ago. I forgot what episode number it was. You have to go to the main website and look it up. But I believe I did a podcast on buying your first handgun. I gave some recommendations on that show. As far as 1911s, you've heard me say on this show I don't recommend 1911s for a first handgun. That could be argued. That could be argued. But, you know, sir, one thing I want to say is I wouldn't worry too much about stopping power. It's a handgun. Okay, all handguns suck. Remember that show I did? Remember the podcast I did on all handguns suck? You know, you might be thinking, "Bob, what are you talking about? This is the Handgun World Show. Why are you saying that all handguns suck?" Because they do. When it comes to stopping power, nothing. No handgun comes even close to a rifle or a shotgun for stopping power. So all handguns suck anyway. Now, is a 45 more powerful than some of the 9mm and 40 caliber options? You know, I'm not going to get into that argument. I refuse to go down that road. I won't get into that argument. Sir, I would say don't worry so much about stopping power. Worry about something that has the capacity to carry enough rounds and still be comfortable for you to carry. Now, if a 1911 is comfortable for you to carry, fine. You know, you've just heard me say that I think that 1911s are not good for a first-time gun owner, but if you're going to train and you're going to practice, then get a 1911 and train and practice, if you can carry it. Now, I don't recommend the 3-inch 1911s. As a lot of you know who have been listening to this show for a while, I just recently bought a 4-inch 1911 in 9mm, and I'm starting to slowly really understand the benefits of 1911s. Sir, you might want to consider a 1911 in 9mm. If you like the visual appeal, you know what? 9mm's got some good stopping power, folks, and you do get a little bit extra capacity with a 9mm 1911. But I'm a big fan of guns that can carry 10 rounds or more and be easy to carry. Something like a Glock 26, something like a Smith & Wesson M&P, something like a Springfield XD, some of the new Taurus guns, some of the new Taurus pistols are out there that are pretty good too. All right, and a lot of these are very, very easy to conceal, and they're lightweight. That's the most important thing, is that they're lightweight, and they're simple. Stick with something simple. Folks, you'll probably almost always hear me recommend on this show, stick with something simple to operate. The SIG 45, it's a good option, but you know what? Have you ever tried to carry one of those? Take a look at how big and heavy that SIG 45 is. I assume what you're talking about is the SIG 220. fantastic gun. Nothing wrong with the SIG 220. I would like to see people have SIG 220s and Glock 21s and big 45s like that, big high-capacity 45s, as home defense weapons. I think those would be great home defense guns. Few people can carry those effectively and keep them well concealed and feel like carrying them all day. Now, I know I've said that a gun doesn't have to be comfortable, that it has to be comforting, and I still stand by that. But some of the big 1911s and the big SIG 45s, the thing I don't like is that they're so big and heavy that they may tempt someone not to carry it, and that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing. The small little 9mm or the tiny 40 caliber that you have with you is a lot better than the 45 that you didn't carry with you today when you really, really need it. So we'll think about that. Okay, now, as far as what happened to your friend, man, I'm really sorry. These are the kinds of emails I don't like getting. I don't like getting emails from people that say that if their friend would have been carrying, he wouldn't have been kidnapped, beaten, and held at gunpoint for 8 hours. Folks, carry a gun. This is why. So I'm sorry that happened. I really, really am. That's what distresses me about emails like this. Obviously, it has woken up this listener, and it's made him think about why he should be carrying. So thank you for sending me that testimonial about what happened to your friend. Sorry it happened to your friend. But again, for all you listeners out there, this reinforces the need to conceal carry. Okay? So as far as your requirements on the gun, sir, something with stopping power, middle range price, and relatively quiet. Again, I don't see how you could go wrong with one of the following. A Glock 19. Okay? You knew I was going to say that, right? A Smith & Wesson M&P 9 Compact, which I just got done talking about on a recent show. Very fine gun. A Springfield Armory XD 9. There's a 4-inch size and there's a subcompact size. Those are good guns. And all three that I just mentioned are reasonably priced. Even some of the larger car arms pistols. There's some larger ones that are bigger than the PM9. A car P9 might be a good pistol for you to consider. It's a little bit bigger than the PM9. I sure love my PM9. The car P9 is not really meant for pocket carry like the PM9 is, but it's a good pistol. And they have, car has some very fine products out there. So that might not be a bad idea. If you like 40 caliber, if you want the compromise between 9mm and 45, if you think that that's a good in-between cartridge for your stopping power needs, then, it's hard to beat the Smith & Wesson series. It really is. It's hard to beat the M&P series. They were built around the 40 caliber. They're soft shooting 40 caliber guns, very soft shooting 40 caliber guns. For a 40 caliber, the M&P is the softest one that I've ever shot. So you might want to consider that. Those are all reasonably priced. So those would be some of my suggestions, and you might want to give some good thought to those and check into those. And, sir, thank you very much for sending me that email. Okay, now, let me shift gears. Let's talk about excess sights. I want to start off this part of the podcast by going ahead and playing an audio clip for you. So listen to this. This is Paul Markle, paulmarkle.com, and you can go to the website and check out Paul Markle. I sure hope that I'm pronouncing that right, but he did a really good video, and here's the audio portion of the video, and I'll put a link to the video, by the way, so you can go watch it. But here's the audio portion of his video on excess sights, excess big dot sights. He makes some really, really good points, and I can't think of a better way to start off this subject and to portray the message that I want to portray. I'll get into depth on this subject, and I'm going to come back and offer you some of my comments. But listen to this soundbite and tell me what you think. Here you go.
All right, we want to spend a little bit of time this afternoon talking about the excess sights or the express sights. For those of you who haven't heard about them, excess sights are a big dot sight. Okay, the big dot sight or the express sight has actually been around for a long time. Express sights have been used on hunting rifles probably going back hundreds of years or more. The question that I get quite often is, well, are express sights accurate, or can I get a good sight picture with Express sights. You know, I know they're good for being fast, but can I get a good sight picture? What I would say to you is, yes, you can get a good sight picture, because your good sight picture with a handgun should be, first and foremost, it should be a clear front sight. Whatever that sight happens to be, it should be a clear front sight. That's where XS sights or the Express sight design excels, because it's a bright white dot. In this case, it's a big dot, so it has a bright white dot with the tritium insert for low light or poor light conditions. When it comes to shooting rapidly and quickly on target, what a lot of us mess where we kind of lose track is we spend all of our time shooting at bullseye targets. We shoot at bullseye targets with little cool little X-rings, and we worry that we're not going to be able to cut the little tiny X-ring out of the bullseye target. And if you can do that, that's fantastic. But that's not what defensive shooting is all about. Defensive shooting is getting your weapon up on target, indexing your front sight on that target, and pressing the trigger in a rapid fashion until the bad guy, your attacker, stops trying to hurt you. Okay. If all you want to do is go to the range on a sunny Sunday afternoon and you want to shoot little tiny groups and cut the X out, then a standard set of iron sights will probably do you well. Now, people also say, well, can you shoot accurately with XS sights? Yes. If you hold still, if you put the front sight in the same place every time, deliberately press the trigger without disturbing that front sight, all of your rounds will go in the same place. So, as we can see here in our little our target man, all of the rounds went right up here in what we call the cardiovascular triangle, or the boiler room, or the preferred zone, whatever you want to call it. Basically, right up here. This is where rounds stop people. Not here, not here, not here. Right here. Okay. So, in closing, are XS sights, our big dot sights, accurate? Yes, they're accurate. Are they fast? Yes, they're fast. So, fast and accurate in a bad situation is probably a good thing. Until next time, keep shooting straight and keep shooting safe.
Okay, you know, one of the comments I really like about that audio clip is he said that they've been around a long time. These are not something new, and also they're very good for hunting rifles and shotguns. So if some of you have been thinking about what kind of combat sights to put on your defensive shotgun and defensive rifles, check into the XS sights on those too. I'm very strongly considering putting them on my shotguns and rifles. Okay, now, I'll say this. The XS handgun sights, they do take a little bit of a time to get used to them. Okay, it does take a little getting used to. They're not a classic notch and post sight that you might be thinking of. Okay, it's a little bit of a different sight picture. Okay, to line up the XS sights, what you got to do is you have to place a large front dot in the center of a shallow V rear notch. I'll say that again. There's a large front dot in the center of a shallow V. Now, some people have asked me, what about the standard dot sights? Because XS makes a smaller white dot up front. For my eyes, at 48 years old and my eyesight is gradually declining, the standard dot doesn't work for me. Okay, I would still strongly recommend the big dot. Most shooters find that when they get used to this type of a sight pattern, they're just as accurate with the big dots as they are with the standard dots. Now, when you do this correctly, when you line this up correctly, the large white dot will actually sit on top of the white line in the center of the V notch of the rear sight. Okay, and some people call this dotting the eye. That's what XS says on their website, dotting the eye. Okay, some people call it a lollipop. Whatever you want to say to describe it, basically it's putting that white dot on top of the white stripe in the shallow V notch on the rear, lining them up and pulling the trigger. Okay, now the 24/7 sights, also known as XS big dot sights, they have a big advantage. And that big advantage of having that white front dot is it's got a little green tritium in the middle. Little green tritium dot in the middle that makes it glow in the dark. The whole white sight's not going to glow in the dark, just the green tritium in the middle. And the rear white line also has tritium in it as well. So they are night sights. Now, the combination of the black, white, and green of the XS big dot sights make them very, very easy to acquire a good combat sight picture. And I notice I chose my words carefully there. Combat sight picture. At close range, and when I say close range, I mean like 12 yards or less, that front dot goes right where you want to shoot, basically. At close range, just put that white dot, that big, huge white dot on the front of your gun that you can't miss, put it where you want to shoot, and make sure it's dotting the eye in the rear and pull the trigger. Okay? At farther distances, your rounds are going to hit near the top of the white dot. And go to the website at xssights.com and check that out. You'll see what I'm talking about. Now, most people find that these sights are far quicker than almost any other sight out there to use at combat ranges. And that's what I'm starting to learn about these sights and starting to fall in love with, is the fast sight acquisition. It does take time to get used to, but it's sometimes even quarter of a second faster on the average than regular notch and post sights. And folks, every little bit counts. That quarter of a second could mean the difference between life and death. Seriously, a quarter of a second too long, and it could be over. Okay, some people might argue that that's not significant, but I think it's a huge, huge measurable distance. A time frame to think about when you're shooting at combat distance. Okay, think about that. Split seconds count. Now, some people also argue that excess sights are not precise. Okay, they're not precise when you're shooting small targets, you know, because there's the lack of a sight window. All right, sight window being the width between the rear sight. And people say, oh, well, but I'm shooting precise when I'm shooting at long distance targets. That big front dot is covering up the sight, and I don't have a good sight window to look through. Okay, it's that lack of a precise window that make these sights fast. You see, that's the advantage of them, actually. This is what makes it real fast. That shallow rear V notch on your back sight. Okay, you're not searching for a window to put that front sight in. That's what takes too long, folks, is when you're searching for that window. So the lack of the window is what makes these doggone things fast. It helps you find the sight quick, get a solid hit needed to save your rear end. And folks, hits count. That's what you need to do. You need to get a solid hit on the target and save your rear end. You don't have to shoot a one-inch group when you're inside of 10 yards. Maybe you can. Maybe you can shoot a one-inch group, and these sights are perfectly capable of doing that in the hands of a skilled shooter. But all you have to worry about is, like I've always said many, many times, get that gun out of the holster, move off the X, move off the line of fire, get out of the way, and put that big dot on the front of that bad guy, or put that big dot front sight on the bad guy and pull the trigger, and shoot until he drops. That's pretty much all you have to worry about. Okay, that's all you got to worry about. And folks, anybody who's familiar with what really happens in a gunfight, they realize that they're not stationary affairs. This is not a static affair where everybody's standing still. Okay, a real gunfight's a situation where almost all of the people participating in it are moving, and that's where excess sights really, really shine. Excess sights really shine when you're shooting on the move, and you are going to be shooting on the move. You know, one problem that a lot of people have when they go the force-on-force training is that they go too fast. And unfortunately, while they're trying to go fast, they don't have the proper sights. That's the thing. You know, and if you're going to go fast, and of course, you know, when you're on a force-on-force situation, you're going to want to go fast. I mean, you're going to want to move. You don't want to stand there. If you have conventional sights and you're trying to find that window, that's what can cause you some problems. Okay? So that's what I want you to think about is, you know, how quickly can you get that... Can you get that target behind that big dot in the front? So, I have another audio soundbite that I want you to listen to. All right, before I play this, that's not specifically about excess sights. It's really about the differences between point shooting and using sights. Now, I'm going to take a point shooting class coming up in May. And the reason I'm going to take it is because I want to sharpen my instinctive shooting skills. But I really believe that you do have to be able to use sights, and you have to learn to use sights. And more often than not, you're probably going to be in a situation where you're going to get a chance to use your sight at least somewhat. Now, I know some of you might disagree with me. I know I might start getting some emails when I say this. Okay, but studies have proven over and over again that you're probably going to at least be able to glance on your sights and at least be able to get a front sight somewhere up into your sight picture as you're trying to get rid of the threat coming at you. Again, that's where big dot sights really shine, because you just can't miss that stupid thing. You just can't miss that big white dot up front. Okay? So here's a soundbite. This is going to set up the next segment of this podcast. I want you to listen to Kyle Lamb from Viking Tactics talk about some of the nuances between point shooting and actually using sights in a defensive situation. Here you go.
Hey, I'm just decided I would talk a little bit here today about some of the stuff we're seeing on the range that is of a concern to those of us that are out there trying to be trainers in this industry. And one of the things that we keep seeing, it seems, is people want to talk about threat-focused shooting, instinctive shooting, point shooting, whatever you might want to call it. And one of the big issues we have with that is that having been shot at and returned fire at an enemy, you do want to see your sights every chance you get. And I think it's kind of a sad state of affairs if we're starting to train our law enforcement or our soldiers to just generally shoot in the area where they think there's a target. I guess with soldiers there might be a little bit of that with using machine guns at farther distances, heavy weapons, things of that nature. But when it comes to law enforcement, I think that threat-focused shooting or point shooting, instinctive shooting, whatever you want to call it, is probably not the road to go down. For liability issues, for one, we need to make sure we account for every round we fire. Now, that doesn't mean if we're contact shooting or we've got somebody right on top of us that we're not just going to point our weapon and start to squeeze the trigger until that threat is eliminated. What it means is if we have a target that allows us to get our sights up on that target, we need to make every effort to use our sights. And I think that you'll have a lot better downrange results once you do that. The other thing that we often see is when we try to do some of our real speed shooting in the courses that we teach, guys think that we stop looking at our sights and we'll just get that accuracy because we're so close to the target. We try to call every single shot that we fire. So when you see some of the drills that we do on video, we are watching our sights. If you watch the tri-lambda drill or any of those drills like that, we're still watching our sights, every single shot. And we to dial that in to make sure that the folks that are doing this are watching their sights, we'll change target locations, we'll put hostages in the overlaid on some of the bad guy targets as well, and you'll see that guys can shoot just as fast when they're reading their sights, and they'll have much better accuracy. So I just want to talk about that for a minute: threat-based shooting, threat-focused shooting, point shooting, reflexive fire. I'm not a big fan of that. I think you need to read your sights, read them quickly, and eliminate the threat. You'll have a lot better luck if you're actually watching your sights. All right, that's all we got.
Okay, I thought he had some very good stuff to say there about being able to just read your sights if you can. You know, to quote James Yeager from Tactical Response, he says, "My rule has always been, use them if you can. I've won gunfights this way, and it is what I teach. Sights, dots, or crosshairs, whatever they are, watch them." Okay, I just quoted James Yeager from Tactical Response on that one, and I agree with him too on that. The reason I want to take a point shooting class is I want to see really what it is that I can do. I want to see just how far I can push myself, and I want to see just what it is I can do without sights. I figure if I train without using sights, then when I've got my big dots on my pistol and I have to use that thing, I got to pull that sucker out of my holster, which I hope that day never comes. But if it does, I want to know that whether I can see my sights or not see my sights, that I'm going to be able to drop that thug who means to harm me. Okay? So, folks, I don't work or represent excess sights in any way. I don't work for them. I don't represent them. All I'm saying is that I mentioned many times on this show, I give you practical experiences. I am a user of their sights, and I'm very close to switching out all of my carry guns because there's two of them that still don't have these sights on it. I'm very seriously thinking about switching the other two out and putting on the XS Big Dot sights. Now, while I'm on this subject, I want to talk about Warren tactical sights, because let's talk about target shooting. All right, you know, if you're going to target shoot, if you're going to be really, really precise at 100 yards or precise at 50 yards, these might not be the sights for you. Although I tell you what, all you got to do is watch that James Yeager video, and folks, please go watch that video. Go to the main website and watch it. All you got to do is watch that, and you might be convinced that, you know what, I could even take precise shots with these XS Big Dots, even though that's not what they're meant for. But, you know, think about it, folks. Are you really going to be doing that? Are you really going to be doing that with a handgun? I want to make the argument that I don't think you will. 99.99% of the time, you're not going to find yourself in a 50-yard situation with your handgun trying to take a precise shot. If you're in a 50-yard situation and you got to defend yourself, go get your rifle. Seriously, if you don't own a rifle, go buy one. Even if you have to get an inexpensive rifle, have something to defend yourself just in case you need to at 50 yards. That's a subject for a whole other podcast. I will do a show on that coming up shortly. But if you do have to take that precise shot with a handgun, you know, the 0.1% of the situations where you may have to do that, okay, something like Warren tactical sights might help you out. And I have those on my Glock 34. You know why? My Glock 34 is a gaming gun. Would I use my Glock 34 in home defense? You bet. Of course. I got one of those Glock tactical lights on it. It's a nice light. You know, the light that goes on the slide rail, or the frame rail. That's what I meant to say, the rail that's on the frame. I got a nice light that goes on that. And, hey, you know what? When I load that thing up with 18 rounds of 9mm and I got that light on there and I got a couple of magazines I can reload, sure. I'd feel confident with my Glock 34. I don't carry my Glock 34, though. So I'm probably not going to be using that in a short-range combat situation because I'm not going to be carrying it, most likely. But I love the Warren Tacticals for target shooting and for gun games like IDPA and IPSC. Those are great shots. See, you can afford to take that extra quarter of a second in competition to get a good sight picture. Okay? You might not win the match if you do that too often, all right, if you haven't gotten good with those sights. But I just don't believe in a combat situation that you could afford to give up a quarter second. I just don't. So I won't put the Warren Tacticals on my carry guns. That's just me. Your mileage may differ. Again, I've always said you're welcome to disagree with me, and I love comments. I love comments, ladies and gentlemen. Please send me comments on what you think of this, because it's your show. It's not mine. You make the show, and your comments make the show. But I'm not going to put the target sights on my carry guns. I'm going to put the combat sights. I do, though, I will say, for target sights or for gun gaming sights, I sure love those Warren tactical sights. And black on black, I'm a black on black kind of guy when it comes to sights. I like a black front sight, and I like a black rear sight. Of course, unless I'm shooting the XS Big Dots. That's what I'm really starting to gravitate to and starting to get used to shooting. The old-fashioned way, I guess you could call it. But I like that old-fashioned type of sight picture. So with that said, this was kind of a short show, but while it was fresh on my mind, I wanted to put some thoughts out there about the excess sights, combat shooting, and point shooting, instinctive shooting, reflexive shooting, whatever you want to call it. I wanted to put some of these thoughts out there on the air for you to listen to, and let me know what you think of it. So please do that. Let me know what you think of this. If some of you have some experiences that you'd like to share, there is a comment section on the main website at handgunworld.com. Use that comment section. My name is Bob Main, and you have just listened to episode number 46 of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Why do I carry a gun with XX Big Dot sights on it? Because I can't carry a gun. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time. Bye.
But it still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley.